Hey guys, I want to invite everybody in. I've got Brian Neville, one of the country's leading securities law attorneys, specifically for transitions in wealth management on the line, and wanted to talk about probably the biggest issue that he sees when larger teams transition that folks may not be aware of or may take a little bit for granted that oftentimes leads to extra legal wrangling associated with a transition, TROs and the like. I wanted him to give an assessment of what that one most important thing is and what he sees the most often that may be missed by larger teams that transition. So I'm going to turn it over to Brian and let him give us the information, ask a follow-up question or two. But Brian, great to have you. And, you know, give us some thoughts here today.
Great. Thank you for having me. So, you know, I've been giving this some thought, and I review on a regular basis the pleadings of pretty much every broker deal or TRO request against former advisors. And I would say the single largest reason for that, which is thus the single largest risk and the biggest mistake that advisors make, is that in some form they're taking data that is outside what is allowed to be taken. And if it's a non-protocol move, that could be even contact information. They take screenshots with cell phones or iPads. They email from a work email address to a personal email address, all of which is not searched for until after you leave. And then they do a search, and a lot of it is detected. And a lot of times there's other risks. Detection risk may seem low, but the ramifications are huge. And one of the things that I've seen is that just serving your clients properly during the lockdown, in many instances, meant that you emailed performance reporting for a meeting from a work email to a personal email. And then you printed it out and went to your client meeting, and everything went fine. And that could have been a year ago now. It could have been many months ago. And that's searched for and used against you after you leave. And so just because you may have done a few things that the firm would see as inappropriate doesn't mean you can't cure that now. And so, you know, we advise our clients, search through those emails and do a good faith search and delete them. Make a note of when you deleted it and mark down the file name and the email name, so you'll be able to respond to any allegations. And I guess I would say one other thing that, you know, in the many years of representing hundreds and hundreds of advisors moving between firms, as much as they're told they don't need this information by the recruiting manager, by myself and everyone else, there is some level of anxiety that creeps in the days leading up to a move, and people take information that they just don't need. And it always or almost always comes back to bite people. So one piece of advice I'd like to impart here is that your receiving firm will help you recreate from publicly available sources all this information. And as you guys know, many of these advisors have tremendous ability to service clients. And the most valuable thing they have is their memory. They do know their clients or they wouldn't be this successful. So the receiving firm can and will help them recreate this contact data. And, you know, I think it's really important to just kind of play by the rules, because while anxiety is normal and it's a big leap of faith to leave a firm you've been with for some time, you simply don't need the data that your previous firm will use against you in a litigation.
Brian, if you could real quickly talk about the difference in data assimilation and you know, what can and cannot be transitioned in a protocol versus non-protocol environment. Give us a sense of what that looks like and what some of the best practices are.
Sure. And you know, the protocol has been around for so long now. The firms that have stayed members of it are really pretty good at making sure that you only take the, you know, quote unquote, five categories of client information, which is the, you know, client list with cell phone, email address, address, account type. And, you know, the protocol also allows advisors to have snapshots of their own kind of product mix, right? Like that's proprietary to you. not to clients. So, you know, if the firm asks you about what percentage of your book is fee-based or transactional, or what are some of the large asset managers you use, hedge funds, mutual funds, ETFs, all that can be transmitted. But just make sure that you're careful in that process of not putting out client-specific information. Now, in a non-protocol move, it is a little bit more difficult because you're not supposed to have any client data with you. And I would say that in a non-protocol move, it's even more critical. I think everyone should have counsel, but in a non-protocol move, you really do. There's a lot of state laws in effect. California, for an example, is the most friendly state, which really does negate most non-solicits, but it doesn't cover what most people would consider confidential information. So even a move in California, while you may be able to solicit, you should recreate that contact information in a non-protocol move from publicly available sources. I think where the rubber hits the road for almost every advisor right now in a non-protocol move, the most frequently asked question I get is, what do I have to do with all of my clients' contacts that are in my cell phone? And that really becomes an issue of when were they put in? If they were put in prior to your starting at that firm, there would be no reason to delete them because the firm can't be heard to say you need to delete something that you had prior to joining us. And in particular, if you joined, say, a UBS or Morgan Stanley when they were a member of the protocol and you had a protocol list, you can certainly take that on your exit. So there are a lot of facts and other things that need to be considered in both protocol and non-protocol moves. I would say the biggest risk is even not the breach of contract claims. It's the Reg SP violations where people go and they take, if you take account statements or performance reports that have account numbers, tax IDs, social security numbers, dates of birth, now you have the double whammy of Reg SP violation and contractual violations. And that's where firms feel almost duty bound to sue you. So they haven't, in essence, aided and abetted a violation of Reg SP.
It's interesting. The difference between protocol and non-protocol is relatively stark. But what I take away from this conversation is, you know, whether it's a shameless plug or not, I really don't care. It's the truth. You know, if you're a team of any scale, you need to have serious counsel when you do a transition, because the distinguished elements here of did you have this number on your cell phone or not when you joined this firm, or when that firm exited protocol, or when this firm exited protocol and you were still working there. I mean, those are nuances that unless you have counsel that is probably working with staff in some way to, to measure the reality there, you're probably going to miss something. And so having counsel, you know, I know I'm asking the guy that is counsel, but, you know, maybe make one more statement about the reality that is the value of having counsel.
Well, look, I would say as follows. Look, I'm a successful attorney. When I buy real estate, I hire a real estate attorney because that's not what I do. And they could find little things that could cost me hundreds of thousands, if not millions, if something goes wrong. Right. Most of the teams at my firm moves, you know, have many millions in trailing 12. And the documents that they're going to sign are probably more important than their mortgages and their closing documents. And they probably used a lawyer for their real estate closing. So you need a specialist. There are really only a handful or so of law firms in the country that specialize in this. And you have to do it all the time. If you're not moving 50 advisors a year or close to it, you really shouldn't be doing this. Either do a lot of it or don't do it. And that's what my firm does. And it is a form of term life insurance. You pay for it and it gives you a lot of protection. And I agree with you. Any firm of size is foolish because you can also get substantial contractual changes in the non-economics area. So if you have a great recruiting team, they'll help you with the business terms, but there's substantial contractual changes you can get that are right. Massively important.
Right. That's absolutely true. And as an example, I think you're talking about the idea that, say, for example, if a private banker has a non-solicit agreement as part of the firm that they're leaving, well, being asked to do some level of performance as it has to do with their business or their book in the initial periods of employment at the new firm, that may be something that contractually needs to be discussed, because how can you perform in a certain way if you're contractually obligated to not formally solicit your clients, right? That type of nuance is of importance, I assume.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I can tell you that in the last year, and even more so going back to the first teams moving under COVID, the recruiting packages had, you know, a first back end at some firms of 6 months, other significant ones at 12 months, that we were able to negotiate extensions to 8 months and 14 months without much pushback from the firms. And right. Because things were going slower during COVID. And there's other examples. I mean, some of the things that a lot of folks don't think about are, you know, what happens if I get hit by a bus and I'm disabled or I die, if there's not the correct provisions in these agreements protecting your family and your estate. So, you know, some of the contractual changes firms will agree to for big producing teams are significant. And advisors moving between firms should take advantage of their leverage, get changes made.
Fantastic. I wanted to thank you for your time, Brian, and really covering the, you know, the data issue when it comes to large teams and the fact that there is, you know, it's more than just data. It's digging deep and understanding where things have come from, where they're going, and the value of counsel in understanding the different nuances associated with that particular issue in a transition. Folks that are listening, if you want to make an appointment with Brian or myself, you can call this number, 740-253-5751. Again, that number is 740-253-5751. Again, we appreciate the expertise here with Brian today, and look forward to speaking to him again. Thanks, Brian. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Andrew. Have a great day.
You bet.